The opinions expressed by the host and guests on Where Did the Road Go are their own and do not represent those of WVBR or its management. Our aim is to explore the fringe, lost civilizations, alternative science, the paranormal, and much more. Join us on the web at wheredidtheroadgo.com, where you can send us questions for our live or future guests via email or the live chat room. And remember to subscribe to us on iTunes. And now welcome to this week's edition of Where Did the Road Go?
Greetings, and I am your host, Soraya, here on Where Did the Road Go? And tonight we have something special for you. We have as our guest, Karen Crisis. Are you there, Karen?
I am. Hello. Good evening.
And say something again. You're a little low.
Hello and good evening. Let's make sure that volume is all the way up.
That could be on my end. Hang on one moment.
Alrighty.
But you are a little bit low. I think people out there can hear you.
Okay.
But anyway, you are, we actually know each other because you were in a band a few years ago.
Oh, yeah, for like 13 few years.
I know it was a little over a decade. I wasn't sure how much.
Indeed.
And were you into spirituality and stuff and this type of stuff when you were in the band?
Well, I have to say that's the really interesting thing about it is that since I was a child, I have had a lot of experiences like people do. The younger I was, the more I would see spirit people there. The older I got, the experiences became more of a sensation or a feeling. Especially on tour, I always had premonitions about how shows would go. There was a very interesting thing that happened with Crisis where people often would not show up for the show until Crisis was setting up our gear on stage. So we could be getting ready for a show and 5 minutes later turn around to a sold out night. It was a very weird phenomenon, but I always had premonitions about the capacity of shows, whether there'd be some violence or trickiness, about people we should or should not work with. I always asked the four archangels. At that time, I just asked four angels to be on the four points. I didn't know that there were four quarters. You know, I didn't know any of these technical terms, but I knew to ask these four angels to protect our van while we were on tour in four different points. And I really felt a sensation when I was singing, whether it would be on stage or in studio or in rehearsal, where there was something bigger than myself moving my voice through me, and I would call it summoning. And it would be very interesting and frustrating sometimes for my bandmates, because whenever we had to write songs, I felt like I've never written a song before in my life. Like, I don't know how to write the lyrics. I don't know how to enter this song and write vocals. I'm not a musician. But once I sort of got my mind out of the way, which for me usually involved what you could kind of call meditation, but I would pick a word out of a thesaurus and sort of journey into it. And at that point, the singing and the became something that happened almost like in a meditative space. My vocals would write themselves in my mind. A lot of other singers, you know, sing in the moment and create the song through sound. And mine would be created in more of like my clairaudience space. And then I would have to figure out how to sing that live. So often I was writing vocal passages that were well out of my vocal range, but when it came time to sing them, the range was there, you know, without any practice to stretch my voice to reach those new notes. So I was very aware of these forces that I considered bigger than myself, more knowledgeable, more talented than myself, and I really relied on them since I was a child, being one of those people that a lot of us can be, feeling a little out of place and out of time on the planet. But I did not know any of the technical terms of what clairvoyance was, of what spirit guides were, what channeling was. It was just that I had a lot more faith in this world of the unseen than I did in humanity, because my experience as a person was, you know, a lot of wounding and trying to understand what this world was. But it wasn't until I left Crisis that I asked the universe to kind of bring it on. Tell me what all this stuff is. What do I call it? What's its history? But I definitely relied on all of those intuitions and my psychic and mediumistic abilities, but not knowing what to call them or always how to turn them on or off.
Hmm. Well, that makes sense, knowing your vocal style and your music. It was always so unique and different from anything else out there. That you were getting it that way makes perfect sense. Yeah, and I mean, you always seem to express so much when you sang.
And the other thing that's interesting is I did not have a background in metal. Right before I joined Crisis, I heard, actually after I joined Crisis, and after the first album, the first demo, the guys in the band introduced me to Pantera and Black Sabbath, but my vocabulary was more industrial noise and experimental stuff. And, you know, even my audition for Crisis was something where I was given a song the night before the rehearsal. At 1 a.m, these vocals popped into my mind, and this very shy, introverted person that I was showed up in the rehearsal space in this group of sort of burly men, and I just asked them to play this song. I didn't want to jam, and before I knew it, I was sort of jumping around the room, and I ended up on the floor looking up at these, you know, my future bandmates looking down at me like, wow, what was that? And the song came out perfectly, note on note, in place, and recorded it later that same way. So I definitely knew there was some force moving through me that wasn't exactly me. Okay. And it's been very interesting.
And now you're doing lectures and some workshop type stuff, right?
Well, a lot of different things. Several years ago, when I was healing some of my own wounds and physical ailments through meditation and guided meditation that I had learned on my own, I started having these dreams that I should learn Reiki, and I didn't know what Reiki was. And I went through all of the attunements and started doing some really intense healing work. And I think in the first 2 years, I did like 1,000 hours worth. People with cancer, animals, people with brain tumors, depression, all sorts of things. You know, anything that came my way. And I started there. And throughout this process of Reiki, it's one of those healing modalities that opens up your psychic senses that are already sort of there. And I started learning more about these psychic senses and going, okay, am I a seer? Am I a healer? Am I a clairvoyant? Am I a clairaudient? What do I call myself? And, you know, I ended up in Tuscany, supposedly to work on my solo album, and I met this very strong and present spirit guide. And she basically helped me find a circle of mediums in San Francisco to train with, according to classic spiritualism. You know, I realized I was a medium. That's why all of my psychic senses were going. And that's why I could communicate with these spirits who would find me in my home or wherever I went, which I used to be very, very scared of. And so I realized, oh, I'm a medium. So for the last 2.5 years now, and could be almost 3, I'm really bad at keeping track of time, I began training with other mediums and then started doing, for about 2 years now, platform mediumistic readings and healings at a spiritualist center in San Francisco a couple times a week. And from that, I began doing lectures and workshops on psychic phenomenon and psychic tools and mediumistic communication in modern times and ancient. And so the lecture workshops kind of deal with a lot of tools and subject matters within that framework, which is a pretty big framework.
Yeah, I'd say. Do you want to tell people a little more about Reiki and what it is?
Well, Reiki is what I would call a universal system. Well, it's a system of healing, a modality of moving energy for the purpose of healing that uses universal energy, meaning it's largely a psychic system that uses, you know, universal energy, that general consciousness energy that is out there. It works according to the law of resonance, where a person who goes through an attunement process, meaning that you make this agreement with the energy, there's already this energy force running through our bodies, right, that animates this physical flesh. And it's a little more complicated than that, but for the sake of Reiki, we can say that we can go through an attunement process where we open up our body's energetic system to carry more of that unadulterated energy that gets dented and crushed throughout our life experience by social pressures and culture and jobs and emotions. And we can carry more of that unadulterated energy in our body as a healer. And what that does is that allows us to bring to the surface all of our issues that need to be brought into balance. And throughout that process, your body changes and you're able to transfer this energy to other people, this higher vibration energy, to allow them to go into a healing agreement with you and the energy. So it brings changes or opportunities for change and balance to body, mind, and spirit. If that helps describe that a little bit.
Yeah. Does it drag up stuff from the subconscious that's causing these issues, or does it just balance out the energy? Okay.
No, it absolutely works on a lot of different levels. There are also spirit guides attached to the Reiki healing system, and some Reiki healers choose to use them and some do not. I had quite a large group of Reiki guides come up. So what happens is, the nice thing about Reiki, especially for people who are just starting to want to learn how to heal or to heal themselves through a process, is that it connects on a physical level, in the sense that the energy is transferred through the body system and the hands of the healer to the person. And it is a hands-on healing modality, but it does not need to be that way. It can also, being that it's a transference of energy, work at a distance. When you're one-on-one with the receiver, you put your hands in different places on their body or their chakra centers to let this energy transfer itself. It brings awareness to what is happening with your personality as well as your spirit in the physical form. The idea being that everything is energy, and so if there is a physical ailment, whether it's a cancer or a series of accidents, a backache, or you know, that all of these have a generation, they have a beginning in energy. It was primarily emotions. You know, we as personalities experience our life through a series of responses and reactions between our soul and our personality on the planet. We have all these emotional responses. And if we can't figure out a way to process these emotional responses and maybe hold on to them over time, we can create like an energetic blockage in our body. It's almost like we're living in the past and the future at the same time, because an event that happened to us a few years ago does not exist, although we have a memory of it, and often our memories spark our emotions, and our emotions that maybe were the original ones we felt at that moment. And being that those are vibrations that are so alive and charged and moving, if we hold on to those memories and emotions and don't find a way to release them or come to peace with them, they can offer this sort of stuck or this blockage in our body, or what I like to call is a loop played on repeat. And if that loop played on repeat is not sort of released in some way, then it will try to get our attention through causing, you know, a mental disturbance or a physical ailment, something that is manifested more on a physical level, where we have to say, oh, I have to pay attention to this, and what is this ailment trying to tell me? So Reiki does go to the source of it, but it really is dependent on the person receiving the energy if they're willing to go that far. You know, it all works on this law of permission and free will. So it can work as deep a level as you need it to, or you are ready to, but that really depends on the healing agreement.
And I can't believe you stayed focused over that siren.
Yes, sorry, it's the city. There's constant street chaos outside the windows.
And you are in San Francisco. I don't know if we mentioned that, all right?
That's correct.
Okay. Now, have you ever tried to use Reiki on someone who didn't believe in it?
Yeah, there isn't a need for belief. However, there, in order for any healing to take place, since it is an agreement, there has to be a willingness to step into that possibility. So if someone says, you know, I would like you to give me a healing, but inside or on a spirit level or a personality level, they're like, I don't want this. The energy is not going to force that person to into any kind of change or healing process. Of course, there are people who can force that kind of change. You bring on some pretty serious karmic debt by breaking the law of you know, will there. So as a healer, you know, your whole code of ethics is to not break that code of agreement. So there are different things that you see during the healing process. If someone's mind is so worried and stressed out about the healing process, but and maybe at a spirit level they are willing to go through some healing, often what happens in Reiki is that that person will almost fall asleep during the whole session. So their mind gets out of the way, that ego that is afraid of change and wants stasis and comfort. And you'll see that person sort of fall asleep so that their mind is out of the way. And the body, which naturally knows how to heal, draws in that energy and lets it work on the various levels it needs to work on.
Yeah, well, so something you hear a lot in different spiritualist circles is that you create your own reality. And I think one of the things that's often misunderstood, it's not just a matter of wanting something, but it's your unconscious that may have some hand in adjusting the reality around you, not so much your ego wanting this or wanting that.
Well, first, to touch on what you said, mediumistic healing is different from a universal modality like Reiki. We could talk about that if you'd like. But second of all, the whole idea of creating a reality is a little more complex. The way I like to describe a human being is this composite creature, if you will. You know, we have our physical body that is animated by energy. And the way I have understood it from my spirit guides is that animated energy comes from source. You can call it universal energy, God, whatever word you're comfortable with. And the spirit or the soul is a bit of an individuation from that source to start off with. You know, because if you're connected to source, there is no need to know the self or to know, you know, who you are and what you're made of, because you are just in that process of being. But in order to have an experience, especially on Earth planet, where we are experiencing and getting to know through opposites, if you will, or experiences, or coming up against other people and situations, you have to have some sort of individuation there so that there is a me versus is you, a good versus bad, a this versus the other, a positive versus a negative, you know, in the world of the relative. So starting from source, there's that individuation that is still connected to source through your soul or your spirit. And on a layer, if we want to look at the human being as layers, that would be your layer that is closest to source, the all-knowing, the generation of who we are. And then we have like our mental layer or a mental body and our emotional layer or our emotional body. And those are parts of us that operate on a more unseen, intangible level, but we can all identify with our thought processes. We can often discern emotions in other people. But then closer to our, as a human being layer, we have our personality, which is sort of an individualized aspect of the human being. So we have all these different levels of energy that make up a human being. You know, the physical matter, for example, vibrates as energy vibrates at a slow enough level so that it's visible to our naked eye. This matter, you know, matter is a slower moving energy. Of course, within matter, there are different rates of vibration. But things like your emotions and your mental processes are vibrations that work on a faster level, and your soul works on an even faster vibration. So oftentimes your personality on the planet will have this will, like, I want to have this career, and I want to do these things, and I want to have these kind of experiences in my life. And that may be something that your Earth personality, your will, you know, closest to this material experience wants. But your spirit, your soul, may have other plans for you on this planet. And, you know, throughout the course of your life, you may have crisis of personality, crisis of financial nature, of relationship nature. And those are those beautiful moments I like to call your spirit peeking through, saying, you know, I'm going to stop all these mental defenses and this will and this ego that you have in place, and, you know, catch you with your off guard and kind of sneak in there in those moments where you are out of your comfort zone and try to get you to understand the greater picture in life and move into this experience of trust. So it's absolutely true that we create our own reality by our vibrations and our thoughts and our emotions and our intentions, but there are also different levels to that.
Okay. All right. Now, you've mentioned spirit guides on a number of occasions. Do you want to explain that a little bit to people?
Sure. Well, since we've touched just briefly on the idea of spiritualism, spiritualism is a modern responsive religion that came into being in modern times in an organized way as a response to your standard ghost story versus... Since ancient times, you know, all of our ancestors believed in one way or another in communicating with spirits, whether it's ancestors, angelic beings, cosmic beings, you know, who came down and gave people ideas on how to socialize and plant things. But in the past, there were so many different modalities or ways of communicating, and some of them relied on superstition, and some of them waited for those experiences to happen. Spiritualism is a modern religion that, again, I said was a responsive religion that began the 1848 as a response to this spirit who began communicating with people and then the neighborhood and then sort of an outreach around the world. And part of that religion is the belief that life is infinite, and whether you're in a physical body or out of it, consciousness is that vibration that continues. And the way that was established was, again, starting from spirit communication and then having to build a way to examine and explore and philosophize about what that meant. So as a spiritual medium, who I am, I believe that, you know, life is never ending. And the way that I have come into understanding that, first it started off with spirit guides and spirit people, and then through doing readings for people I do or do not know, you call platform from the platform, meeting spirit people who are like passed on relatives and loved ones and friends of other people, and having those spirit people communicate to me information about a perfect stranger in front of me, and, you know, finding out if that information is correct based on that person. So a spirit guide, though, if we're going to kind of categorize spirit people or people who are living outside of the physical body and in a higher vibration, are what you could call spirit guides, guides and helpers, of which there are many. Native American guides, guides from India, there's the archangel realm. There are all sorts of avatars and ascended masters and people who did or did not have life on this planet. And often with spirit guides, you cannot always corroborate that information unless they give you historical information. But they're there to sort of help you on your path, whether it's raising yourself up spiritually, making your creative projects manifest as an artist or a musician, helping you heal your own ailments or those of others, giving you intellectual advice, scientific advice. It's always this form of consciousness that's giving you information outside of your own capabilities or beyond your own educational level, which gets pretty exciting.
And most of the time, is there any way to know that they are what they claim to be?
Well, there are certain ways that you can check that out on your own. For example, when a lot of people start meditating, they meet their higher self, which is that sort of higher part of you that can connect that universal wisdom out there, which is largely psychic information, records of what has happened on the planet or in your own personal life, you know, where you are now in your life and how you got out there based on your emotional and mental patterns. you know, accessing information like that, past lives, which is all very interesting. When it comes to spirit guides and archangels, there's some information that you can do to find records historically, but a lot of it has to do with being in the experience. For example, if a spirit guide, actually, you know, in spiritualist records, there are some of the forerunners who, for example, there was this man named Emanuel Swedenborg, mm-hmm. and he was a scientist, and he did a lot of mining, and he had his hands in a lot of different things. He's a very respected authority on metallurgy and engineering and for the military and astronomy, etc. And at a certain point in his life, he went on the spiritual path because an angel appeared to him, and he devoted his time to finding out more about what this angel had to tell him about the spiritual world. Along the way, a spirit guide appeared to him who was a Native American. And this Native American spirit guide actually gave him a lot of information about how to progress his business in terms of mining, like where to find deposits of this mineral or where to find deposits of this, that, and the other. So he was actually given a lot of technical information about mining and deposits of things in the earth that he was actually able to go dig up and use to propel his business forward that he wouldn't have known about. So that's an interesting way of, you know, he wasn't able to necessarily tell you when this Native American was born and what his name was. But this spirit person, this Native American, was able to give him a lot of information that was evidenced by other people as being real and true and beyond their scope of knowledge for that time period, which is like in the 1700s into the early 1800s, where they didn't have radars and sonars to look into the earth.
Well, I guess the more I deal with the paranormal and between my own experiences and stuff I read, it almost seems like these things put on a show sometimes, that they're not quite what they seem, and they may be giving you valuable information, but the outer shell that you see is just a disguise, I guess, is what I'm saying. It's hard to tell that they're actually what they say they are.
In terms of the way they appear? You mean it, like, yeah, the way they appear?
Maybe, right, like if they're appearing as a Native American, it doesn't mean that they're actually the spirit of a Native American, or it could just be the appearance it chooses.
Sure, and I think that's another really great point, is that when a person is out of the physical body and just consciousness, you can move energy much quicker, and you do not have a physical body. Therefore, you do not have, you know, cancer, physical ailments, and you don't need to have a physical body. However, for the purpose of communication with people who are still in a body, you'll find that, yes, spirit people show up in all sorts of appearances that, you know, are maybe easily digestible to you. For example, an archangel may show up to me in a way that's not going to terrify me, and someone else, they may look even more gentle and banal and loving, and for someone else, they may see a more terrifying version. But spirit people who want to work with you tend to work with you with visual vocabulary that they know you will be able to connect with, you know, and communicate with. That's what becomes interesting when, as a medium, you're dealing with people who you can prove were living on the planet, like passed on relatives, loved ones, and friends of other people, because that spirit person will show up displaying identifying factors, physical appearance, accessories like glasses or a favorite shawl or a family heirloom jewel, for the sake of identifying them to the person who's asking you to connect with this, you know, spirit person.
Right.
But it's true that spirit can change form. You know, spirit people continue to grow too, so they may have passed on as a child, and a medium may see them as a young adult. Or someone may have died emaciated from a type of cancer, but they may show themselves to a medium as glowing and looking, you know, youthful and beautiful, because they can change their form for us to see.
Okay. How much do you deal with altered states of consciousness when you do this medium type of work?
Well, what is your definition of altered state of consciousness? Because I know for a lot of people, they have different ideas about what that is.
I would say anything that's not based normal to what everyone is used to in the material world. So hence, dreaming technically would be an altered state of consciousness, and anything that is not zero level normal.
Yeah, I'm the wrong person to ask about zero level normal. However, I'm not a trance medium, I would say, where I am in such a deep place where my own personality takes a back door for someone else.
Okay.
But in terms of communicating with spirit people, in the spiritualist tradition, there is a process of getting into a meditative state and focusing on a particular frequency of vibration, which has to do with love, like this very expansive vibration that is being that is expansive versus dealing with psychic information, which can be all sorts of positive, negative, you can kind of have a whole range of stuff happening with psychic information. With spiritualism, you do focus on getting into this process of a higher vibration, raising my vibration to a higher vibration so that the spirit people that are much higher vibration than myself can lower theirs a little bit so there is a connection. Some people talk about this as being, in an altered state, traveling to another dimension, but I'm still very much in my physical body because I am on the planet. It is important to still be connected to my body to have an accurate experience. But I am actually changing my energetic vibration to move at a much faster rate of speed. And I've had experiences where I've met, source vibration and beautiful, beautiful angelic spirits that are vibrating at such a fast rate of speed that I was overwhelmed with, emotion and feeling like my body physically was almost going to shake apart. So that's been very interesting for, to your guides or my guides, anyone going through this kind of training will be able to experience these different rates of vibration so you can also discern with whom you are speaking. But there is a definite, even though I'm in my body, I'm experiencing vibrations that I don't normally experience on a daily basis.
Okay. When you say you see these spirit guides, do you see them like a normal person standing there, or is it more of a sense, or what?
I used to see them physically in the room. It could be really scary. When I was much younger, working like at a retail job, I remember one night I was vacuuming a little 99-cent store. I was about to go to college, and I was plugging in the vacuum, and I felt someone watching me. I turned around and I saw some people standing in the room who looked like they were from the 1920s. I can still see them so clearly. They were in the room, and I thought, I just must be tired, and I went back to vacuum, and I looked back two more times. By the third time I looked back, there was a room full of people, and they were very solid looking and had color and facial hair and, very particular style of clothing. At that point, I was really terrified, and I ran into the back room where my manager was to make, some excuse about getting away from that room. So when I was younger, there was a period of time where I was seeing them very, very vividly. In fact, the first date I went on was extremely embarrassing. This man took me to this jazz bar straight out of a David Lynch movie. It had this low, sparkly ceiling and this white marble bar top that kind of curved. It was just this very designy, interesting looking place, and I kept bumping into people saying excuse me, or I would talk to the person next to me, and my date finally at a certain point said, okay, what kind of drugs are you on tonight? And I said, well, what do you mean? And he said, you're talking to thin air all night long, and I really want to know what's going on. And so, when I was younger, I didn't realize that people I were seeing weren't there. Now it's very different for me. I feel I get the information in different ways. Sometimes I feel the presence of someone very, very strongly. I can sense whether they're male or female, their emotional state. When I close my eyes, I see things very, very clearly. But I don't tend to see spirit people during the day, like out in the open anymore. Sometimes I'll get little flashes. It's more of a very strong sensation. And I can close my eyes and tune into more of the characteristics briefly. And once I kind of close my eyes and have that connection, then I'm able to sort of see them in my mind's eye for the duration of the communication.
All right. Well, we got to take a quick 45-second break. We'll be back with Karen after this.
V
The opinions expressed by the host and guests on Where Did the Road Go are their own and do not represent those of WVBR or its management. Join us on the web at wheredidtheroadgo.com, where you can send us questions for our live guests via email or the live chat room. You can also check out our upcoming schedule, blog, link section, book reviews, videos, and links to our Twitter, Facebook, iTunes, and much more. That's wheredidtheroadgo.com.
And if you do have any questions you'd like me to ask Karen, go to wheredidtheroadgo.com and click on the chat room and come in and ask. We don't use the email. I should probably clarify that. We don't use the email during the live show, but we do use the chat room. So if you want me to ask anything live, go in there, and I will relay the question to her. And we are speaking to Karen Crisis, and you're working on a couple of books, aren't you?
I am indeed. I'm working on... As I've been working on the main two books, these lecture workshops sort of began. So I started focusing on writing smaller lecture books in the meanwhile, which will be part of the bigger book. as we were talking before we did this interview, these are all things that I write from my guide. So I don't sit down at the computer. I've never considered myself a writer. So the idea of writing a book or a small book is something my mind finds really stressful. But when my spirit guides wanted to write these books in terms of explaining a lot of things to people who had questions, who were having experiences and not sure if they were psychic, if they're mediumistic, what does any of that mean anyway? What is healing? I would just sit down at my computer and all I'd have to do is type. And sometimes they would want me to keep typing for hours. I don't edit any of the things. I don't go back and change anything except my typos. So it's a very interesting process of them wanting me to write this information. Or if I'm really inquisitive, I write this information. And that's one of the things that I find really exciting about being able to use my abilities in a more organized way, because as curious and inquisitive as my mind may be, I will get the answers that I'm seeking from, you know, my spirit guides. And it's very interesting because all of these lecture books I've written in the other book, I can't really remember what anything is in there. If you start talking to me about the book, I would probably have to go back and look at it. And while I've assimilated a lot of this information from talking to people about it, the information that's in the books is definitely information channeled. So I just kind of, you know, relax and let them type through me. The lectures that I do in person are very, very different. They're based on the idea of that information, but the lectures are meant to be experiential. So, which is another one of the great things about spiritualism, is it believes in having this scientific aspect to it. Not that anyone should just believe what spiritualism says about, you know, the natural constant laws of energy and consciousness, but that you should have your own experiences and decide for yourself. So the lecture workshops were built around this: psychic phenomena, mediumistic communication, giving people the chance in the lectures to experience them, whether it's through readings or guided meditations, and also discussing some of the material. But every time I do a lecture, I'm channeling the information in the moment. So they're different every time, even though, you know, they're around a very set chunk of information. So that's another really interesting thing.
Are they ever, do you ever videotape these and upload them anywhere?
I really wish I would have thought about that. But as I told you before, I'm just becoming friends, you know, with technology. and then I would have to see how people felt about that.
Sure.
Because my workshops are very, they're very intimate, even if they're with a large group. And they're very exciting because people who thought they would never have an experience do. People who thought they'd never be able to get a spirit message from, you know, their favorite uncle do. And so I also, you know, have thought about that, but I would also, if I were to take it further, need to respect, you know, these tender moments that people have. And so I'm not sure if other people would be into that.
Okay. What about negative experiences? Have you ever experienced negative entities?
Absolutely. And it's a really common thing for people who teach themselves. For example, I have learned, you know, and practiced ceremonial magic and a lot of different modalities that I got my hands in there for experiences. And what happens is when you teach yourself any of these psychic systems, and some of them do have mediumistic processes in them, you're, unless you really know what you're doing, which we none of us do at the beginning, really, you open the door for anything to find you. Because what you're doing is, you know, spirit sees you as a light bulb in a way, and the more you increase your light bulb, the more spirit people are going to be attracted to you. And then, as we talked about layers of a human being later, whatever your layers of emotional intention and integrity and things are in there, you're going to attract not only spirit helpers and guides who can influence you, but spirit people who can influence you according to your emotions. You know, if you're going through a really angry time period and you're doing magic, you know, rituals that open up those doors of communication, you may attract very angry spirits or lower vibrational spirits. So I've had some experiences where I would say, you know, spirit people would show up in my house and in kind of a rude way, you know, sit on my bed, come up behind me very aggressively, and not really be interested in communicating, but trying to intimidate me on a vibrational level. And I know plenty of techniques to get them out. I know my, you know, natural laws and the law of will, but those are kind of unpleasant. It's kind of hard to go into all the details of all of them and remember all of them, but I've had a lot of those. They're great learning lessons on how to, you know, deal with that at another time. But I also, from now, from the understanding too, I understand that, you know, this is just a person, and just like on the planet, there are people who are thieves and, you know, rapists, and who really don't care about other people's boundaries. And you can have some people who've got some really negative intentions. And it's the same thing in the spirit world. However, there is that law of will there, so I have a choice on who to let into my space or not. But as teaching myself, as other people do have those experiences, you definitely run into all sorts of spirit people out there.
Okay, what about things that are completely alien type spirits, like things that don't necessarily come across as human, you know, in any way?
Well, I've had some experiences that I would say, you know, I'd call with shadow people. Shadow people being, that's another interesting idea. Since energy is neither created nor destroyed, you know, you have creations out there, like the idea of evil and Satan and all the scapegoats that humanity has built, you know, throughout time to sort of blame our issues or bad problems on. You know, there's this force that won't let me succeed in my life. A lot of those are repositories of energy in a way, as the collective consciousness, through repeated motions, we've built this sensation of an evil, a dark force of, you know, the devil. We sort of put in a lot of energy into that. But there's no consciousness there. However, that is an energetic pinpoint on our map, if you will. So those, I've run into those kind of bodies of information, and they're non-communicative. And I always know that when I run into something like that that's non-communicative, that it's more of like a collection of thought forms. But there are times where I've had, for example, a spirit person who really knows how to move energy can put a thought form in a place for intimidation. When I'm able to recognize that this is a thought form, this is a shadow of something else. And, you know, there's also that parallel in spirit as on planet. If I look behind that shadow, then I can see the spirit person who is trying to wreak havoc or put fear into me or someone else. But I tend to look at things in terms of categories of consciousness versus thought form. In terms of something that seemed like, you know, an alien from another planet.
Or just alien to this world, necessarily extraterrestrial.
Well, for sure. I mean, spirit, you know, spirit people are in some ways alien to this world when you're dealing with like archangels and certain spirit guides. But in that sense, I've had a lot of benevolent experiences.
Okay. We do have a question in the chat. And they said, I feel a strong bestial feminine energy inside of me contrasting my male body. I feel that my soul is female. When I close my eyes and use my voice, I become physically very hot and sweat profusely. In the end, the entire room will smell like me. Most of the people around me go into a daze. I believe that I am channeling. What do you think?
Well, the presence of heat is definitely a signifier that there is a form of spirit consciousness around you. And channeling is something that can happen, that you can do consciously and according to a process and have an agreement about how much your personality or your vitality is in your body versus someone else's. Being that there is, from what you're saying, you know, an alleged appearance or change in the people around you, that would be something you could categorize as physical mediumship or, yes, channeling, some sort of psychic phenomenon that's manifested that other people experience. So without knowing a lot of other information, just from a technical, observable standpoint, yes, that would appear that you're channeling something.
Do you ever do any work with Kundalini?
I did because of my healing work, yes.
What are your thoughts on that? Because that also deals with a lot in heat and cold as well.
Definitely. A lot of modalities do, but Kundalini is that sort of energy moving along, you know, two channels, if you want to say, for simplistic form, you know, along your spine, opening the male and female energies. And it's something that can happen suddenly and open someone's psychic senses without them knowing it, suddenly and unexpectedly, and can be uncomfortable. Or with a little more knowledge of that experience, it can be something quite transformative.
Okay, let's go a little more into the history of spiritualism. I know the other night we were talking about the Fox sisters.
Yeah, so spiritualism is very interesting. You know, there were some forerunners to modern spiritualism. I mentioned like Emanuel Swedenborg, and then there was this man, Andrew Jackson Davis, who was kind of a poor, sickly young man with no education, and he almost died. He had the typical, if you want to call it, you know, shaman experience where he almost died and a spirit person came and helped him heal himself through some information from that spirit person. And he ended up writing a lot of books that are kind of important for spiritualism. And he became this very prolific writer and speaker, being someone who, you know, again, spirit working in contrast through the limitations of being human. The interesting thing about Davis is he believed in this idea of God or source as being both mother and father, or both male and female, which, you know, sounds very pagan and so interesting. But what happened in the early 1800s, in 1848, was a series of events in this cottage originally built by Dr. Hyde. There were a couple of families who lived in it. And what ended up happening was, after Dr. Hyde moved out, just to make this as quick as possible, the Bells moved in, and they had a housekeeper named Lucretia. And one day this peddler came to visit them, and Mrs. Bell and the housekeeper were looking at some of his wares and thimbles and pieces of lace, or, you know, whatever the peddler was selling. And the housekeeper was really excited to for the next day when the peddler would come by so that she could give him money for the things she wanted. And he didn't come by. And what ended up happening over time is the housekeeper was terrified by all these psychic phenomena that began happening. Like, she began to see apparitions of a ghost and hearing, you know, sounds. And she found this soft area in the cellar. And the psychic phenomenon occurred at such a strong rate, and it didn't dissipate, so the family moved out. The whole family moved out. And then the Weekman family moved in around 1846, and they and their young daughters were, and their housekeeper, again, another housekeeper, were seeing apparitions of this man walking around in gray trousers and a black jacket, and they were feeling cold sensations and hearing these rapping sounds, and they got terrified and moved out. Then the Fox family moved in, and again, the same type thing started happening in 1848, and which actually Andrew Jackson Davis had a premonition about, or he was told that this would be the advent of something spiritual that the whole public would experience. So as the Fox family was beginning to be terrified as well by this psychic phenomenon, and hearing these raps and feeling these cold touches, one day the mother and her two daughters, Margaret and Kate, decided they were just going to figure out what was going on. And they did a series of experiments, like by snapping their fingers and clapping their hands and hearing the spirit person who was making these loud sounds clap and, you know, snap in the same type of, like if the daughter clapped five times, the raps would happen five times. So they began doing these experiments, like to have the spirit copycat them, and started realizing that there was some intelligence there. And to make a long story short, Mrs. Fox figured out this way of attaching the alphabet with the spirit to the amount of raps so that they could communicate, kind of like an early boardless Ouija board, if you will. And they began to find out that this spirit person knew their names and how old they were. And they realized, wow, there is a consciousness here. And they asked him if he was a person. They asked him if he was a spirit person. And he said, yes, you know, I'm a person in spirit. Long story short, you know, they started telling their neighbors about this and people around the town. And people started coming to see the Foxes communicate with the spirit to give them all sorts of information about themselves, or to answer their questions. And as time went on, they found out the name of this man, Robert Rosna, and they actually found, he told them that he was murdered in the house, and they actually found fragments of his skulls and some of his peddler ware in the basement, in the cellar, over time period. So this was like the situation where this ghost story was undeniable, and word of it traveled around town and on into New York City, and people began coming to experience this. And then the Fox sisters actually worked with this spirit presence to travel around to New York City, for example, and overseas to England, and do early modern platform readings for people with spirit help, which was very interesting for Victorian times. You know, women were not supposed to be speaking in public and knowing intimate information about people. You know, how unladylike and unpolite. But here they were with this help of the spirit person doing readings for people. And so what ended up happening as a result is people gathered around this phenomenon and said, oh, we have to find out more of what life is about and life after the death of the physical body through the information the spirit can give us. And, you know, then you have this wealth, this explosion of people, a lot of whom were skeptics, especially the men, who wanted to, you know, expose spiritualism as a fraud, which organized itself as a religion so that it would have this forum to scientifically experiment and find out through evidential experiences what is, you know, this mediumistic form of communication, what is life and consciousness. And these men and women ended up becoming, you know, levitators and having experiences of physical mediumship and mental mediumship and automatic writing and making all sorts of interesting discoveries, scientific, militaristic, weapons and health that would later, planetary as well, you know, come into the science books later on in life. But this was, you know, a modern advent of something that was in response to what we all know as a ghost story, in a nutshell.
Okay. All right. We have a couple of questions from the chat room. The first from Rainer Rampage. He said, "How have you ever fought off possession? I used to feel my body become paralyzed and feel a foreign form force itself into my body. Normally, while sleeping, I believed I had to fight it off in order to prevent it from harming me, and that could also potentially be sleep paralysis as well."
Sure. When I was younger, I had a similar experience to that. Like before I was in college, it was really terrifying. And yeah, there are a couple of things that you can say is that you know, as human beings, we all have psychic senses. It's a natural way of receiving information that relates to our five senses. You know, we see, we smell, we hear, we touch. We can clairvoyantly see, we can clairsentiently feel, we can clairaudiently hear things. And with those psychic senses, we can communicate with spirit people, spirit beings. And some people are born with these abilities very, very open. You kind of have to figure out how to get some control over them. And one of those things is having spirit people try to get into your body. You know, this is something that is an indicator that your abilities are open, and it would be helpful for you to learn a system to understand how to control your own vibration, and yes, to keep that spirit trying to get into your body out, or to be able to discern who that is. Sleep paralysis is something, you know, a little bit different, but for people who do feel other spirit people coming into their body, that does happen. Possession isn't something that can happen long term. If we want to talk about vibrations again, which hopefully is a little reassuring, because of the fact that your physical body is built inside out, if you will, for your spirit, for your emotions, for your mental processes. It's almost like your body is the plant of everything going on under the surface. So the shape of your body, the physical health that you have, your characteristics and the way you move, these are all, it's like your personal energy, your specific energy is plugged into this physical form to make it work. Someone else can plug into your energetic, into your physical body temporarily. They can't full time because the body would cease to function. It has been born and blossomed according to your own vibrations. But there are times where your own, if you want to say your personality or your personal vitality, the strength of your presence in your body is lower. For example, if you're doing drugs, if you are on alcohol, if you're sleeping, you know, these are times where your own vitality is not as physically or is not in such a strong presence in your body. So depending on some of the things happening in your abilities or in your intentional space, boundary issues, etc., other people can come in temporarily and try to use your body. So the more that you learn, understand that, okay, this is something that I need to learn how to control and understand about, you know, the vibrational scale, which like classic mediumship teaches you, the less you have to worry about someone else invading your boundaries and getting into your space, because it can happen to anyone. But that is something that happens. It can just only happen short term.
All right. And Kobe, first of all, wants to wish you a very early happy birthday.
Thank you.
And wants you to elaborate a little bit on the books you intend to publish.
Well, the one book is, and it's not titled yet, but it's kind of about what is the purpose of life and everything in it. You know, I began asking questions, what is life? What is death? What is memory? What is the purpose of cancer? What is the purpose of healing? What are chakras? What is ascension? You know, all these kind of questions that I wanted to ask that I didn't know anything about. I kind of said, you know what? I don't have time to write, to read books and all of these subject matters. Let's see if my spirit guides will tell me. That's a pretty huge book about all of these things we're talking about and more. The other book is really about my personal experiences as a kid, having to come to terms with the fact that, you know, I'm a psychic medium and what those experiences were like. And I think that's important because everyone I keep meeting in my life has had these experiences and has a lot of questions and doesn't necessarily have someone to talk to about it. There's a lot of misinformation out there. And so that's the second book. And those are the two that I'm focusing on right now. The third book that I also have a lot of information on is all the information that I've gotten from the archangels. And which, as you know, Soraya, is something that I'm kind of interested in. And if we want to talk about evidence of them existing, the fact that people since ancient times have records of getting similar information from these similar described beings over time. So those are the three main books in a nutshell.
All right. And you're still doing painting and stuff, right?
I am still doing painting. I haven't done anything brand new in a while, but I'm about to start again.
You did an did you do all the major arcana from a tarot deck? Reinterpreting?
Almost. I didn't quite finish it, so I'm still working on that. And after that, I did a series of paintings about mediumship, physical and mental mediumship.
Now these are darker than what you might expect from a more New Age twist on things.
Yeah, well, New Age is definitely different from mediumship, but for sure, I'm someone who, you know, is not going to suddenly be wearing like white robes and a turban and changing my name to some unpronounceable, you know, name from another country that I don't come from. I really have come to understand that the way, you know, I function in my life looks different. It may feel different from people, but I believe that, you know, spirit has a purpose for that. I'm just here, and I'm kind of doing my thing without planning a lot of things ahead of time, and it ends up looking a bit different. But I believe there is so much to be learned from the dark and the light, and that they work together, and that they are complements to each other. So there's a lot of beauty there.
And when you paint, do you also kind of channel those images through yourself, or does it work differently?
I don't think I used to as much, but a few years ago when I met my primary spirit guide, and she kind of came into my life in this undeniable force, lovely forcibly way, not forcibly, but in an undeniable way, and she began to help teach me a lot of different things. I had a conversation with her about my artwork because I was really frustrated at this time with painting. My ideas would come out sort of looking the way I wanted, but it was what I would call a crapshoot. You know, sometimes the painting would look great, and sometimes I couldn't make the painting happen. And being self-taught, it was very frustrating to know, why can I not repeat the same success visually this time if I did last time? So I asked my spirit guide to help me, and we would build the paintings together in my mind, and she would help me paint them. So again, I'm doing things that are beyond my scope of knowledge that I have already, but she helps me paint in the process. And I literally paint and sit there going, you know, I don't know how to paint fabric. I don't know how to paint a bird. How am I going to do this? And I'll hear her say, you just keep the, and I'll help you out. And so you can, if you look at my website, my art website, I think you can see a very distinct change in my painting, a change in consistency of results, and that's what that is from.
And that is KarenCrisis.net, correct?
Yes.
And you want to spell it for people?
That would be KarenCrisis.net.
All right, and people who are interested in your spiritual work, they can go to KarenCrisisHeals.com, right?
Correct.
And you do Reiki sessions over the internet, right? Over Skype?
I do Reiki. I do Reiki. I do mediumistic readings, and I do my lectures, too, over Skype.
Okay. All right. Okay. Is there anything else people should know? Anything else people should know that we haven't covered regarding this? We're going to get into your music stuff in our next radio show, The Last Exit. But as far as the spiritual stuff, is there anything we didn't cover that we should have?
Oh, yeah, but I think that would take a whole nother hour.
Okay. All right. Well, I guess we'll have to have you back at some point.
Yeah, that would be great. Thanks.
All right. So here's what we're going to do. Karen is going to stick around for The Last Exit for the Lost. If you are listening live, it's just going to go right into it. If you are listening on the podcast and you're interested in hearing Karen talk about Ifol Duath, her new band, and her solo project, that you can get to the archive at thelastexit.org. All right, so we're going to hear some Crisis here to end this off. And anyone who is not into heavier music, you might want to turn it down. So this is not metal like Metallica is metal. It's not modern rock. This is very, very heavy, shall we say. I think that fits.
Okay.
And people will be able to hear what you were talking about earlier as to how your vocal style is very different and how you kind of channel it out there a little bit.
Sounds great.
All right. So next week on the show, we have Andrew Collins back, and he's going to be giving us some updates about Göbekli Tepe and talking about the Watchers and the Anunnaki. And we also got Russ Baker coming up and some other interesting stuff in the works. So here we go. This is Crisis off their final record with Karen singing. This is a song called Nomad. The album is Like Sheep Led to Slaughter. And we will be back in just a little bit with Karen to talk about her musical career on The Last Exit for the Lost. So we will see you next week. Thanks, Karen.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.